So we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 8, the character of Bharat Maharaj, and it's text 20. And since it's in prose, we're going to just read the translation of purport. That deer is exactly like a prince. When will it return? When will it again display its personal activities, which is so pleasing? When will it again pacify a wounded heart like mine? I certainly must have no pious assets. Otherwise, the deer would have returned by now. Quite romantic for a deer. Purport, out of strong affection, the king accepted the small deer as if it were a prince. This is called moha. Due to his anxiety over the deer's absence, the king addressed the animal as though it were his son. Out of affection, anyone can be addressed as anything. I'm going to read the next verse also. Alas! The small deer, while playing with me and seeing me feigning meditation with closed eyes, would circumambulate me due to anger arising from love. And it would fearfully touch the points of its soft horns, which felt like drops of water. It's pure poetry. Purport. Now King Bharat considers his meditation false. While engaged in meditation, he was actually thinking of his deer. And would feel great pleasure when the animal pricked him with the points of its horns. Feigning meditation, the king would actually think of the animal, and this was but a sign of his downfall. And it goes on. Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutai Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swamitanamane Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunivadi Pasgatya De Satarana. This is one of the amazing stories in the Srimad Bhagavatam. How someone who's at the beginning stages of bhava can fall into a romantic relationship with a deer. Even a normal person nowadays, if someone develops such an affectionate relationship with an animal, it's considered completely normal. I guess if you're in love with a deer, it's as good as being in love with a dog, or a cat, or a parakeet, or a fish in an aquarium. In any case, it's not expected, it wasn't expected, that someone who's in such an exalted position, the emperor of the entire world, and I'm not so sure how far that extended, whether it extended past Jambudvip or even past Bardvarsha. But in any case, even if he was just the emperor of Bardvarsha, that means the emperor of all the different continents that we know of presently. Unlimited opulence, servants, strength, fame, wealth, beauty, etc. Retires at a comparatively young age, maybe he's only 100,000 years old or something for that age. Goes into the forest and fixes his mind perfectly on Krishna, experiences transcendental ecstasy constantly, and then somehow or another falls in love with a fawn and forgets everything and then becomes a fawn. This is obviously a word of caution for us, because, first of all, most of us are not in the stage of bhava. And even if we say we're not in the stage of bhava, to understand what the stage of bhava is requires a lot of spiritual advancement, to even have a conception of what bhava is. Even have the conception of what nishta is, where one is no longer disturbed by the incessant flow of desires that are entering into our minds, just like the rivers enter into the ocean. To be so full of thoughts about Krishna that material thoughts don't disturb us anymore. That's the neutral stage of nishtha. On that stage, one is always joyful because one has realized that one is eternal. There's no more affection for a hankering and lamentation. And everyone is seen equally. Equally in the sense that one doesn't see anyone as apart from Krishna. It is not that one treats everyone exactly the same, the state of nishtha, but one is not thinking that this person is Krishna's servant or that this person is acting according to Krishna's direction and that someone else isn't. One sees that everything is uniformly being carried out through Krishna and his energies. Then one can begin to actually develop pure devotional service, and the first stop, general stop, is called ruchi, where one is excited all the time and everything has taste. All the colors, all the sounds, all the smells are all pleasureful, the varieties of different pleasures for the spiritual senses, because one is acting on the spiritual platform, and therefore the spiritual senses are awake. They're not contaminated by our material experience or conceptions. And then the taste, the happiness becomes so great, one cannot think about Krishna. One cannot stop but think about Krishna. One cannot stop thinking about Krishna because it's just too painful not to think about Krishna. To think about the material energy becomes so painful that immediately the mind starts thinking about Krishna again without any effort. And that's a sakti. And when we multiply a sakti millions of times, then we come to the stage of bhava where there is ecstasy at every moment. The body is shivering in the different types of sattvika bhavas. The body is shivering. The hair is standing on end. There's tears in the eyes and devastation. And that's the beginning of bhava. And then when we multiply bhava millions of times, then we come to the stage of prema, which has certain characteristics. What are the two characteristics for bhava? There are six characteristics of pure devotional service, two in bhava. What are the two for sadhana bhakti? What's that? No, that's bhakti virakdhanam shunyataha. Bhakti parashnu No, there are six characteristics of pure devotional service. Two for sadhana bhakti, two for bhava bhakti, and two for prema bhakti. The one that you were talking about is bhakti avyakta kaletvam virakta manushunyata asha vanda samudkanta nama gana siddharuchi. Those are the characteristics of bhava, the qualities of bhava. Yes? Louder. Yes, that's pretty close. That's good. One is called Subhada, the development of all auspicious qualities, and the other is Klesha Agni. The Klesha means the miseries, and the diminution of miseries, especially the reactions for one's sinful activities, which is the root cause. Avidya is the root cause of misery. And then there is what's called papa. And then there is the different types of reactions in dormant reactions, which are manifested. And then we have the tendency towards sin, which is the seed. Seed in Sanskrit, what's the word for seed? Bija, bija. Papa and kuta, and what is the unmanifested? Aparabdha and parabdha karma, and then the bija, etc. See, so it actually goes vidya, bija, parabdha and aparabdha karma, kuta, and then it goes back to bija again. So these are the cause of misery. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that Dumena Vriyate Vanira Itar Darsho Malenacha Itobena Vrita Garbas Tata Tenevam Avrita. So when we're covered by the different manifestations of lust, which appear as greed, anger, illusion, madness, forgetfulness, loss of intelligence, delusion, then we don't see things clearly. And how do we know? We think, I like this person, and I don't like this person. Why? Because this person can help me gratify my senses, and this person is an obstacle. Or if I bite on him, he won't taste, or she won't taste good. So I don't like them. Bite on them figuratively or literally. So we like some things that causes happiness sensually, and we dislike things that are essentially dissatisfying to our senses. So everything is judged from the sensual platform. But in that state, we see things differently. Just like when one falls in the material world, one falls into a romance, one becomes falls in love with someone, they look beautiful. And after chewing on them for a while, they don't taste very good, and they don't look as beautiful anymore either. So beauty is in the eyes of the beholder, which is more or less according to our conditioned nature. As Prabhupada said, every husband generally sees his wife as very beautiful, however ugly she may be. So that's called moha, as to the extent we can see to the extent moha can work, that a person who is actually practically Krishna conscious can fall in love with a deer. I mean, deer is cute, but I don't know, it seems pretty strange to fall in love with a deer. They're not exactly very, reciprocal. And I don't think if you put a deer on the cover of Playboy magazine, people would be very impressed. I hope not. Society hasn't gone that far down yet. Wow, look at that deer. Can't believe it. But somehow or another, moha is so powerful. And we see things like that. But that's not the end of it. Avritam gyan etena gyanino nityavarina kama rupena kundya dusprena analena cha. Material nature also pushes us. It's not enough just to look at something and see it as beautiful. It pushes us to do something in order to satisfy the demands of lust or anger or greed or illusion or enviousness or whatever. Material nature is pushing us. The six pushings of the senses, vacha vegam, manasa krodha vegam, jiva vegam, udrapasta vegam, etan yo veta dira, shisha, savam apimam, prativam, visha heta dira. Vacha vegam, manasa krodha vegam, jiva vegam, udrapasta vegam, etan vegam, yo vishaheti dira, sarvam apimam prativim sashishat. So, we probably have noticed the tongue pushes us sometimes, or the belly, or the genitals, and it's all led by the mind, and anger, words, we're being pushed by the material nature. So this is a sign, if we're being pushed by the material nature, we must be also covered by the material nature. So it's not so, we cannot help the material nature because it's going to push us. But what we can do is not react to its pushing if we have a different vision. If we accept the vision that goes along with the pushing, then we'll follow it along. Yes, he is my enemy. He did this to me last week. Get even. Yes, you'll feel so good. Watch him suffer. Oh, wow. Again, do it again. So we accept the pushing then we'll also have to, we're also accepting the vision. But with the pushing could be there, but if we have a different vision, we may not react according to the pushing. Instead, hopefully, well, there's two choices. Either we tolerate the pushing, that's called tapasvi, which is not ideal, but is better than following the pushing. Or we fix the mind on Krishna. If we fix the mind on Krishna, if we see things in relation to Krishna, we see what we're supposed, what Krishna wants us to do, and we think of Krishna in that attitude of service, then the result is Krishna will appear, and in the pleasure or the ecstasy of associating with Krishna, that pushing will diminish, and our vision will change. Our realization will be more in line with Shastra than in the modes of nature. So, kleshagni, subhada, and then we can act auspiciously if we act in devotional service without going into the... Then we have two for bhava bhakti. What are the two for bhava bhakti? These things we actually have to know. Just like if you're going on a journey, it's good to know where you're going. If you don't know where you're going, then why go on the journey? If we don't know what we're trying to achieve, then how we know if we're actually getting there? So it's not like, oh, there's a few devotees in the movement, they're scholars. And they know what we're doing. Everyone else is a fool and rascal. We have no idea what we're doing, but the prasadam's good. Therefore, we stick around. No, we have to know what's going on. So what are the two for bhava bhakti? What's that? Okay, they're actually further extensions of sadhana bhakti. One of them is that liberation seems insignificant. Moksha lagu krit. Just like the auspiciousness of devotional service is such that it attracts everyone, is beneficial for everyone, gives one all good qualities. But when one comes to the stage of bhava, the auspiciousness is so great that even liberation, the freedom from all material miseries, seems insignificant at bhava because the pleasure is so great. And at the same time, it's the only way to actually attract Krishna. And at the stage of prema, the happiness is so great that one doesn't even perceive material existence anymore. There is no material existence. And what's the last one? What's that? Yeah, it's rarely achieved. Actually, that's for bhava bhakti, is rarely achieved. And the other one is the only means of attracting Krishna. So these are the qualities rarely achieved. Bharat Maharaj had achieved bhava, or at least the beginning stages of bhava, and he went beyond liberation. He could actually meditate and trance upon Krishna. It's one thing to be liberated from material desires. The other thing is to actually be able to expand one's meditation in such a way is that one feels himself to be in the spiritual world. That ruchi, that's the beginning of it. This world itself, and one seems like it's all pleasurable. All the things that in this world, all our senses are filled with hearing, smelling, touching, breathing, whatever we're doing. It's all in relation to Krishna. So it all feels very pleasurable. and at sakti, the pleasure increases. But at bhava, one is actually able to meditate in trance upon Krishna. The descriptions of Krishna, just like one of my favorite pastimes to relate this, when Krishna is seen walking on the bank of the Jamuna, he was nicely seen decorated with tilak, and his body was smeared with the pulp of sandalwood and tulsi leaves. His body was garlanded with forest flowers. The bumblebees became mad after the treasure and the sweetness of the atmosphere, and being pleased by the humming of the sound of the bees, Krishna began to play upon his flute, and the combined sounds became so sweet to hear that the aquatic birds like the cranes, the ducks, and the swans stopped swimming and flying and became stunned, and then they closed their eyes and entered into a trance, a meditation, a worship of Krishna. Simple pastime. There's no iPhone. There's no HD, what is an HD movie? High dimension? High definition movies. There's only bees and birds and a river and Krishna. But if one goes over that pastime again and again, then gradually one will actually be able to perceive or conceive of that pastime more and more deeply, and one can actually feel some happiness by doing that. We can try it one more time, because it's nitya nava 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 yavana. It's always more and more fresh. So when Krishna, so try to imagine Krishna, what he looks like. He has a flute. He has a peacock feather. He has blacker skin. He's wearing garlands of forest flowers. Some of the flowers are red. Some of them are yellow. Some of them are blue. Some of them are purple. And he has blooming eyes like lotus petals. He has a head bedecked with a peacock feather. And he's a figure of beauty, charming all these different cupids. And he's walking along the bank of the Jamuna, which is blackish. And he has a flute to his mouth. He has tilak on his forehead. His body, which is blackish, like a new monsoon rain cloud, also has sandalwood pulp, which is darkish all over his body, and some tulsi leaves scattered here and there. He's playing on his flute, and all the bees are being attracted, and we can hear the humming sound of the bees. And they're combining together the sound of his flute, the humming sound of the bees, and all these in the Jamuna, there are cranes, big birds with long legs. There are ducks swimming on the Jamuna. There are swans, beautiful white swans swimming on the Jamuna. And they stop swimming and flying, and they become stunned. And they close their eyes and enter into a trance, a meditation, a worship of Krishna. And we can remember that these are gopis who are meditating on this. So we should meditate on the gopis, meditating on the ducks who are meditating on Krishna. So we get the mood of Madhurya Rasa, the mood of Shanta Rasa, the mood of Krishna reciprocating with his devotees. So at the stage of bhava, one is thinking about this constantly and is always expanding and getting one's meditation, is getting progressively deeper and deeper and deeper at every moment. One is feeling ever new transcendental pleasure at every moment from such meditation, unlimitedly. And then suddenly a deer comes along and one forgets about Krishna and goes and falls in love with the deer. It's pretty inconceivable. Of course, it happened over some period of time, but we can see how tricky Maya is. A little bit. If we were actually in bhava, or even ruchi, it would even become more inconceivable. For us, who may be at the stage of trying to come to an artha nivritti, it's not so surprising that someone would forget Krishna. But when we come to ruchi, or even nishta, liberation, it's amazing that anyone could forget Krishna even at Nishta or Aruchi or Asakti, it becomes progressively more and more amazing, astonishing that such a thing could have happened. In any case, this pastime serves as a caution to us that we shouldn't think, well, I'm a devotee, I am practicing for so many years, Maya is not going to touch me. As we know, there was one famous yogi, or infamous, we call him infamous. You probably heard of him. His name was Rajneesh. You've heard of Rajneesh? What's that? Osho? Someone's at an air pump just talking to us. The microphone is talking. You've heard of Osho? So Osho was a brahmachari. And he was living in Bombay, and he was very proud of his celibacy. So one day he put an article in a big newspaper in India, a newspaper that went all over India, and challenged anyone, any prostitute, to cause him to fall down. So one famous prostitute came from Delhi to Bombay and accepted the challenge. Rajneesh spent the night with her, and the next day he wrote an article, or soon after he wrote an article, The Liberation by Sex. So he challenged Maya and he lost. So we're also supposed to be, this is supposed to serve an example, be a little cautious in dealing with Maya. Don't be so sure that we haven't made, we're going back to the spiritual world. One has to be cautious. Prabhupada came to Boston in 1969. And I remember Prabhupada walked up the stairs. I was there. Boston Temple was on the second floor at that time of a building. The first building I think we bought, we were actually the owners of, and it had two stories. And it was housing the BBT press at that time. So Prabhupada came there to see the press, and I was, other devotees from Buffalo, we all went from Buffalo to New York to do Harinam, and then we went to Boston, which is relatively not that far away. And I remember Prabhupada walked up the steps to the second floor, and Prabhupada's presence was so powerful that the whole room became Vaikuntha. My consciousness was completely transformed into a different platform of consciousness where there was absolutely no anxiety. Everything was happiness. And then Prabhupada left. He went back. He wasn't living in the temple. There was no place for him to live there. And his servant, Purushottam, said he stood at the head of his bed. He fell back onto his bed, rolled over and said, I pray to Krishna every night to please protect me from Maya. So here's a person who's so transcendentally situated, a devotee who's so transcendentally situated that he's creating a spiritual atmosphere wherever he's going, and he's praying to Krishna to protect me from Maya. And we may be thinking, I'm quite advanced. I don't think I'm practically out of Maya. So that's the difference. One who's actually very advanced, then Krishna becomes so dear, one becomes afraid of losing Krishna. Even the liberators, the associates of Krishna in the spiritual world are constantly, I was reading in Shivaram Maharaj's book, there is one Manjari, her name is Rati, or Tulsi Devi. She's an assistant to, I forget what she was, connected, I think, with Indru Lekha. Or Vishak, I think she's most connected with Indru Lekha. But she's also connected with Lalita. And she's a personal assistant with Rupa Goswami, or Rupa Manjari, and Bomo Lila Rati Manjari is Raghunath Das Goswami. But in the transcendental pastimes of Radha and Krishna, she is Rati or Tulsi Manjari. And she's a constant associate of Srimati Radharani, performing all kinds of services for Srimati Radharani. But you can see in the mood, which is Kusuma Balapa by Raghunath Das Goswami, her mood is that she's always in anxiety whether Srimati Radharani has actually accepted her as her eternal servant. She's constantly praying in these pastimes for Srimati Radharani to confirm that she's actually accepted her as an eternal servant. There's no question of familiarity or that now I got my fixed service, I'm never going to fall down. There's always the anxiety present of always trying to take more and more shelter, get more and more, be more and more pleasing. So that's the mood of a liberated soul, and I think that begins to actually take place at the stage of spontaneous devotional service, this ever-growing anxiety to be part of Krishna's entourage and be one of his associates and be always engaged in his service. Something's trying to tell me something. What's that? No, this mic. This is not an iPhone. I don't even know what it's trying to tell me. I just turned it off. Therefore, we should look at these pastimes and try to appreciate that we have to be very careful in our devotional service and not take for granted what we're doing. Not let our minds wander to material activities. And when we're chanting japa, actually try to chant japa. It's our only hope for this age that we're actually clearly chanting the holy names. And that we're actually utilizing our tongue and our lips and our jaw and our ears in such a way that we have to fully engage our intelligence in the chanting so that our intelligence is so powerful that it doesn't become distracted from whatever thoughts may enter into our mind. We ourselves, our minds may not be so strong that we're so absorbed in Krishna consciousness that we're meditating on Krishna's pastimes at every moment. But if we use our intelligence and fully engage ourselves in the chanting, then there'll be little opportunity to become distracted by material thoughts. And gradually, as our chanting becomes better, as we chant with more attention and more feeling, more priti, then gradually Krishna will reciprocate and our mind will no longer distract us as it becomes purified. So at our stage, we have to take shelter of the chanting, and then gradually it may help us come to the higher stages. But even we come to the platform of nishta, ruchi, asakti, or even bhava, that one still has to be cautious. And even when one comes to this platform of prema bhakti, it's not that the cautiousness stops. One becomes even more cautious, even more fearful of losing Krishna's association. And because of that fearfulness of losing Krishna's association, one gets Krishna's association ever more intimately. Or as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, if you cannot fix your mind upon me without deviation, then follow the regular principles of devotional service, and this way try to develop the desire to obtain me. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
Sometimes we are going to Maya because of offenses. And sometimes Krishna told his devotee to Maya like challenges to make him stronger. How to understand? Is it I'm in Maya because of offenses, or this is the desire of Krishna?
Well, as we can understand, we're in Maya because of our offenses. Krishna has no desire whatsoever to put us in Maya. He doesn't have to put us in Maya because we're already in Maya. And we're in Maya not because Krishna wanted to put us in Maya. is because of our offenses. Therefore, there are 10 offenses against chanting the holy name, and if we avoid them, then Krishna will take us out of Maya. One time, Srila Prabhupada was walking with Giriraj Maharaj on the Bombay, in Bombay on the beach there. Prabhupada made a philosophical comment, and Giriraj Maharaj reacted by saying, "Thank you, Srila Prabhupada. Now I've understood. Before I understood what you said, I was in Maya." And Srila Prabhupada started to chuckle, and he said, "You were in Maya." He said, "You're always in Maya. Just sometimes we appear to get a little illumination, and we conclude we're out of Maya. We may be less in Maya. It's not that, for instance, if we experience some ecstasy, that's not spiritual. But we're not about to see that even the ecstasy that we experience when one is conditioned doesn't immediately take one out of Maya. It simply gives one a higher platform of consciousness. So that the mode of nature one is under goes from ignorance to passion to goodness. And when we're in goodness, then we start seeing things constantly properly. But even in goodness, one can said to be in Maya. To just give one more example, when Daksha Maharaj was offering his prayers, then at that time, they were so nicely being offered that Lord Vishnu came riding on the back of Garuda along with the demigods. This time, Lord Vishnu had 8 arms. And Daksha Maharaj was so ecstatic that he couldn't keep on standing while he was offering the prayers. Because of the transcendental pleasure, he had to sit down. And when Vishnu came, he said, "What can I do for you?" So Daksha, after offering such elegant prayers and having the darshan personally of Vishnu, prayed for unlimited capacity for sex life. So this is almost inconceivable. He could have asked for pure devotional service. He could have asked for liberation into the spiritual world. But he asked for the capacity for unlimited sex life because that was his motivation for performing his austerity and offering prayers. So he was in Maya. And even when he got Krishna's association, he was still in Maya, no matter how much ecstasy he felt. Yes.
Maharaj, sometimes that, very often actually, that story of Dhanmaraj is used by devotees to warn other devotees not to be compassionate or, in other words, to be careful. And you see that sometimes devotees tend to be a little bit standoffish or a little bit cold when it comes to other animals. But actually, the story is meant to teach us that we shouldn't be attached. We should not just focus on the goal. Not that we shouldn't be compassionate animals. That's the example of Chitambaram. I just wanted to hear your comments on it, because I hear that a lot of times we'll use that.
That's the first time I ever heard that. Well, I think you're because you're involved in those things. But I think,
because even kind of like when I was a brahmachari way back, I saw devotees often being very standoffish with animals, like, "Oh, you can't help the dog, it's dirty," and that sort of thing. When actually the dog's just the soul, it just happens to have a dog.
Yeah, well, we have to be careful. We can see from Prabhupada's example, you know, he wasn't so compassionate to animals. I remember one time, we can read in the Lilamrita, when Prabhupada came to visit Mukunda and Janaki in their apartment, they had a cat, and it landed on Prabhupada's leg, and Prabhupada just threw it off. So, on the other hand, you know, we have Govinda Dasi telling the story when Prabhupada pointed to a slug on the desk, and Prabhupada said, "Chant to the poor thing." So we have to, you know, take it both ways. One is, we don't want to become overly involved in saving the animals, because not that we don't want to save the animals, because we want to save all living entities, like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, even the plants and the trees and the insects, by loudly chanting the holy name, which is what Haridas Thakur said. But if we do get involved too much in helping the animals, it may distract us from helping the human beings. So our main thing is to help the human beings, And if we help the human beings, they'll actually stop killing the animals, which is the main problem that's going on in this world nowadays. And if they stop killing the animals, all the other animals will be properly situated also. The human beings are the main problem in this world nowadays.
But aren't we supposed to be indiscriminate, like Samadarshana, seeing the equality of all beings?
No, we can't do that. Yes, theoretically we do. Until we become a self-realized soul, Vidya Vinaya Sampane Brahmani Gavi Hastini. Yes, theoretically we see the equality of the soul, but we treat people differently. We don't, yeah, so we treat equally. So it's not that we forget that within the heart of an elephant or a dog or even the dog eater or an outcast or the Brahmin, we don't forget that they're Krishna's servants. But our main process in this age is to do Harinam, not at the zoo, but in public. So,
being compassionate to an animal, you have to give them all we know. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, well, that's all right. But
attention and respecting him as a soul is my point. There is soul in my brother and my sister.
And anyhow, it's strategy. In other words, the Sankirtan movement by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is exemplified by Prabhupada, had a particular strategy how to help all living entities. That when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in stress and he asked Haridas Thakur, how can all living entities be liberated? Haridas Thakur answered by the loud chanting of the holy name that even the inanimate objects will actually become liberated also. So we have a strategy to help all living entities. And as I said, if we convert, it'll be very difficult to convert a dog into a devotee. We may help them. It's much easier to convert a human being. And if we convert a human being, then it's much more likely that they'll also participate in the Sankirtan movement and help all living entities. Anything else? Yes.
Is listening.
Yes, good. All right. Yes, cooperation. Thank you. Anything else? Thank you very much. Grandaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande Hari Bol.